Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Finals!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. Right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. I'm happy to be with you on the afternoon drive, and we get the start of the NFL football season. I can't wait. Stoked for tonight, right here on KOAL at 6:20. The Philadelphia Eagles and the Atlanta Falcons will square off. It finally means something, and of course, we'll have NFL football back for you for another season. I do want to talk NFL tonight, but I'm also going to talk college football, because we're 2 days away from the Utah Utes continuing their season as they take on Northern Illinois. College football lives here on KOAL as well on Saturdays, and we got some other big games, including a Pac-12 showdown between USC and Stanford. We get Georgia, South Carolina, a lot of college football. I want to talk all football today because Coach Josh Huntsman of the Carbon Dinos is going to join us next segment for the local sports talk. So see, we got a lot of football to get to. Let's dive into the national sports headlines. Again, we're talking about the Falcons and the Eagles tonight. It gets real. Bold prediction here. I think this one comes down to the wire. I really do. I like both teams. I was talking about offensive arsenals yesterday on the show, and I think these two are top five in the NFL. I think the Atlanta Falcons are going to be a lot better this season. I think that Julio Jones is going to be much improved based off what he did last year. He's talked about wanting to get in a better sync, I guess is the word to use, with Matt Ryan, especially in scoring situations. They've added to the offense with Calvin Ridley. I like Atlanta. I like Atlanta's chances this year. I don't know how you necessarily prepare for this team now with Austin Hooper and again with Calvin Ridley and Mohamed Sanu and Julio Jones, and having the likes of a Tevin Coleman and a Devontae Freeman out of the backfield. When you talk about offensive arsenals, you have to talk about the Atlanta Falcons. Here's Matt Ryan talking about the start of the season.
You know, obviously, we put in a lot of hard work during the offseason, during training camp, to get to this point. I feel like we've got a good, talented team and guys that have worked really hard. So we're excited about the opportunity Thursday and hopefully kicking this thing off on the right foot.
Only a season removed from his MVP type here. And again, Julio Jones on the outside. He's got his new contract. He's happy. He talks about the defense.
They're all right. They can cover well. You know, we played them last year, and they was victorious, you know. But that's last year. We don't speak on last year and things like that. What we've seen in the preseason, they just rotating some guys in and out just to see who's going to play for them, but nothing yet because it's the first game, going into the first game.
I know that's a highlight on the Atlanta Falcons for what we have up and coming tonight. They're going up against the Super Bowl champs. I don't like Philly this year nearly as much as I did last year, regardless if it's Carson Wentz or if it's Nick Foles under center. But again, they're going to win the NFC East. To me, there's a gauntlet in the NFC. You have the Falcons, you have the Saints. You can't forget about the Panthers. Okay, that's one division. You have the Rams in the West. I think they're all alone. You have the Eagles in the East. I think they're all alone. But then you have the North. And you have Minnesota, and you have Green Bay with a healthy Aaron Rodgers, and I think you have an improved Chicago squad this year. Offensively, I think they're going to be pretty good. And then you also have the Detroit Lions with Matt Stafford. I think that the NFC is a freaking gauntlet, and that's going to be on display tonight. Again, we'll talk a little more NFL football later on in the show. Let's look at some of the other headlines, and why not? How about some golf? Tiger Woods racked up his best round of the year after shooting a 62 at the BMW Championship. That's vintage Tiger. That's good for the sport, right? Shot 29 over his first nine holes and finished with an 8-under par at 62, the third of four FedEx Cup playoff events. His round, it was matched by Rory McIlroy, who also shot a 62. Now golf is entertaining over the next couple of days. The 29 for Tiger included four birdies and an eagle, And it was the sixth sub-30 score of his career and the first since he shot a 28 in the second round of East Lake during the 2017 Tour Championship. It's been that long. But again, this is great for golf. And it seems like the only time I'm talking about golf is when Tiger Woods is involved, or Phil Mickelson, one of the two. But there's a reason for that. This guy pushes the sport. You know who else helps push it? Rory McIlroy. And to see Tiger and Rory at the top of the leaderboard with a 62 after round one, that's phenomenal. Now, you have a couple of guys that are, of course, lurking, and the next couple of rounds are going to be interesting. But guess what? Golf has my attention after Tiger shoots a 62 today. That's phenomenal. That's great. Great for the sport. Elsewhere, it's kind of a silent day as far as some of the headlines in the national sports scene goes. I know earlier it was reported, it's been reported here on KOAL and through all the other media outlets throughout the country, that actor Burt Reynolds has passed away. And I don't know if people know this or remember this. He was a Florida State running back. Lifelong Seminole. That's how he's going to be remembered. Lee Corso was talking about it. He was actually Reynolds' roommate at Florida State. He said, "We've always stayed in touch through good and the bad times of our lives. We talk about once a month for as long as I can remember." Boy, that's sad. Burt Reynolds, definitely an icon, passing away today. And like I said, I just don't know that a lot of people know that he played. He was a running back for Florida State. I remember him from The Longest Yard, the original Longest Yard. The second one or the remake, it was good. But I'm always going to remember Burt Reynolds in that original Longest Yard. It's one of my favorite movies, especially from that era. Burt Reynolds sadly passing away at the age of 82. A big-time Florida State fan, ex-running back for FSU. Let's move over to Major League Baseball. Short slate of games. They're going to begin in about 30 minutes. We get the Padres and the Reds. Eric Lauer going up against Luis Castillo in that contest. 5:05 tonight, the Chicago Cubs. They'll roll Kyle Hendricks out of the mound to take on Steven Strasburg and the Washington Nationals. You probably would have thought that that game would have a little bit more meaning about 4 months ago. Not the case. The Cubs, 82-57. No shock there. The Nationals, two games under 500 at 69-71. Strasburg, his ERA is over 4. Hendricks at 3.7. 5:07 tonight, we get the Indians and the Blue Jays. And in the nightcap, it's the Braves and the Diamondbacks. Plenty more coming up here on this Thursday edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm going to give you the local sports recap in just a moment. Coach Josh Huntsman will join us over the phone. And we're going to talk to Antoine Staley about some college football. And of course, we've got to talk NFL. It's all coming up on this Thursday edition of Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Forum Studios on KOAL 107.3 FM. And 7:50 a.m. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. The USU Eastern women's soccer team made their 2018 NJCAA Division I poll debut Wednesday, coming in at number 20 in the rankings. Wednesday's appearance in the poll is the first time the women's soccer team has been ranked since they were 17 back on September 27th of 2016. So far this season, the Lady Eagles have a 3-0 record after defeating Sheridan 3-1 this past Friday and Trinidad State 4-0 on Saturday. Ahead of them in the poll is SWAC rival Snow College, coming in at 10. This Friday and Saturday, the Eagles will host the College of Southern Nevada to open up conference play. Friday's game is scheduled for 1 p.m. Saturday's game will start at 11 a.m. Both games will be played at the USU Eastern Soccer Field north of the campus. We move over to high school volleyball. And earlier this week, on Tuesday, the Carbon Lady Dinos opened up Region 14 play with a 3-set victory over the Mesa Prep Lions. And again, that was Tuesday night at Carbon High. Holding the lead for much of the night, the Lady Dinos worked vigorously to earn the three-game sweep, 25-23, 25-13, and 25-20. Tuesday's tilt was also the first region game under head coach Teresa Maurer. The win marks the second consecutive for Carbon after the team defeated Altamont last Tuesday. The Lady Dinos also recently participated in a St. George tournament August 24th and 25th. Carbon will continue the region season tonight as they take on the Juab Wasps. After suffering a loss to Delta last week, Juab improved to 1-1 in a region contest with a straight set sweep over Providence Hall. That game was on Tuesday. The current region standings place Carbon right now just one game behind Delta, who's a perfect 2-0. Now we stick with volleyball, but we move over to Emory High, and tonight the Lady Spartans will travel on the road to meet the South Sevier Rams. Start time for this game is set for 6:30 p.m. It's the second game of the week for the Lady Spartans. The first was this past Tuesday against Altamont. Now we stick with the high school sports schedule, and today the Lady Spartans will return to the soccer field as they take on the South Sevier Rams. Start time for this game is set for 4 p.m. And as far as Carbon High School goes, the tennis squad will play host to Union as well this afternoon at 4 p.m. This will be a home contest. We move to the national sports scene, and tonight on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM, NFL football will make its return. The Atlanta Falcons will take on the world champion Philadelphia Eagles. Live coverage of Westwood One's production tonight will begin at 6 p.m. Kickoff is set for 6:20. And remember, you can listen to the NFL every Thursday night on KOAL. Today on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, beginning at 4 p.m., we'll catch up with Carbon High School football coach Josh Huntsman. Carbon is currently 0-3, and they'll be entering the fourth and final non-region contest of the season tomorrow as they travel on the road to take on Ogden. We will bring you live coverage of this contest on KRPX 95.3 The Peak. And later on this afternoon on KOAL, Coach Huntsman will set the stage for the contest. Again, that's on Drive Time Sports beginning at 4 p.m. on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Time for some more high school football talk here on Drive Time Sports. Tomorrow night, the Carbon Dinos will travel on the road to meet the Ogden Tigers. I'll bring you the live play-by-play call on our sister station, KRPX 95.3 The Peak. Carbon looking for their first win of the season. Very close this past Friday. Highly competitive game against the Duchesne Eagles. And joining us right now to talk a bit about that game and what is up and coming this weekend, we have Coach Josh Huntsman right now over the phone. Coach, as always, it's a pleasure to get you on the show. Thank you.
I definitely appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely, Coach. Let's start by talking about this past Friday's contest. Going toe-to-toe with Duchesne at home, we knew this was a very winnable game, but at the same time, a very tough game. And for those who were there in attendance, they got to see a very exciting contest, kind of a back-and-forth deal, and unfortunately, Duchesne comes out on top 21-12.
Yeah, you know, it was a good football game. We started chasing points early, and I think that was kind of the downfall of us. You know, we've got to just continue to do what we do, you know, score points, kick extra points, and be satisfied with what we get.
As far as the new look for you guys, you did change up the offense a little bit, spread things out. I know you attempted a lot more passes in this past Friday's game than you have over the first two games. All in all, the Veer option, it's fun, it's entertaining. I had an opportunity to come to a practice and watch it. What was your overall assessment of the new offense?
That's getting there. You know, you put it four days before a game, you put an offense in and expect the kids to be perfect at it. And, you know, we weren't quite perfect, but our kids played it really, really well.
The excitement seemed to be around the team in regards to this offense. And I remember hearing you talk to the kids about it and, you know, scrapping the double wing altogether. It seems like the kids kind of gravitated towards this offense. Why is that, Coach? Is it more fun? Does it give them a little bit more flexibility? I mean, why do the kids gravitate to the Veer option?
You know, kids are interesting these days. They see spread offense on TV, and that's what they want to run. And so we decided, you know, it was time for us to, you know, run a little bit of that. We're still relying on the same things that we've been teaching all year about power football, but also giving them an opportunity to spread it out and throw the ball around the yard a little bit.
I like this offense, Coach, because you guys have a combination of a lot of different athletes. Colin Lewis is kind of your, you know, grind and pound guy right up the gut. If he runs in between the guard and the center, I mean, he's going to be effective for you guys. You're not going to see him outside the tackles too often. I love what you have on the outside with Riker Larson. Great kid. He's been dynamic over the first couple of weeks for you guys. And you have Jalen Dennis, and we can't forget about some of the other options that you guys have on the outside as well. I like this because it seems like it could highlight each individual kid.
You know, it definitely does, and you know, being able to switch offenses here and there is going to be beneficial for us as well. You know, in that ball game the other night, we actually got back down into double wing on a second down and ran a sweep play with Riker Larson. You know, if Riker doesn't drop the ball, I think he scores on the play. He had the edge. He was running really well, and you know, it's just nice to be able to mix it up, being able to run on inside the tackles, being able to run outside of the tackles, and and being able to actually throw at some of our outside receivers. And so, you know, there was a lot more balance. We actually threw the ball 23 times in the ball game, which is you know, quite rare for my offense anyways. And so it was nice to see our kids actually step up, make catches, and actually get things done that way.
How much of a difference did it make, at least from a team mindset, coach, to be in the game going into the fourth quarter, to have an opportunity to win it? Did you notice a mindset shift from this team, you know, compared to the first 2 weeks?
You know, we definitely did, and our kids battled. They battled hard throughout the entire game. You know, if we weren't chasing points in the first half, if we would have just kicked extra points, we'd have been closer in that ball game, and we would have actually been driving to win the football game instead of driving to try to get to a tie. And so, you know, for us, you know, we need to, as a coaching staff, we need to do a better job at recognizing situations and things like that, so that we're looking for wins in the fourth quarter instead of trying to get to the tie.
As far as the defense in this game goes, Coach, I know you guys have switched things up a little bit. Did they seem more comfortable going into a second week of the 4-3 set?
They definitely were more comfortable. You know, we've got a few things that we need to work with. Our defensive line, you know, being able to follow pull blockers, being able to attack our gaps a little bit better. But, you know, defensively, I thought our kids looked good. I mean, that's one of the lowest outcomes that we've held the team to in quite a while. And so that was actually nice to see our defense step up and do a job that they did the other night.
Right. When you mentioned that, I want to point out that just because Duchesne has that 1A tag, don't be fooled. Duchesne could definitely compete, if not beat, a lot of 3 and maybe even some 4A schools. So the fact that you guys held them to 21 points to me is an accomplishment, especially off what we've seen from them over the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, you know, they've definitely put up a lot of points over the last couple of weeks. And our big thing was we just wanted to keep them inside the tackles, be able to make plays with our linebackers, be able to make plays with our defensive line. And I thought our kids, you know, did a much better job this week of maintaining the outside edge.
Coach Josh Huntsman again joining us right now over the phone as we talk about this past Friday's game for Carbon against Duchesne. Coach, let's jump ahead and we'll talk about Ogden. Before we get to that point, what is practice? How has it been for you guys so far this week? I know it's a short week as far as school goes, but how have things gone over the last couple of days?
You know, we practiced at 7 o'clock on Monday night. You know, we put in kind of our no-huddle look at that time, running plays in from the sideline with hand signals and with keywords. And so I thought our kids did well picking that up. And, you know, it was a good practice. And then yesterday, kids looked good. We worked a lot on defense yesterday, trying to get our blitzes correct, trying to get our lines a little more solidified. But, you know, I thought our kids have looked pretty good all week.
It is the final non-region game of the season. I think there's a mindset that you have to figure out what kind of team you are. You have to have an identity once you get past the fourth region game. I don't know if that's necessarily true, Coach, especially in the 3A North with the amount of parity that we are about to see, I think, over the next 4 or 5 weeks. But with that being said, what is this team's identity going into the final region game?
You know, we're just a group of guys that are out there playing football. We're still trying to find ourselves a little bit. You know, we think that we have something with this offense. We think that we have something with the 4-3 defense, but, you know, we're still trying to find ourselves a little bit. There's things that happen outside of the football field that we're still trying to control and trying to get taken care of. And if our kids can figure that out, I think they're going to be a great football team. But, you know, they've got to decide that they want to commit to being great. And that's the hard part, is getting people to commit to be great. You know, you can always want to, and you can always say, you know what, that's a great team. I wonder how they did it. But, you know, our kids have to figure out how to commit to being a great football team.
Coach, let's talk about Ogden. This is a team that can definitely put up some points offensively. Kind of a mixed bag of nuts if you take a look at their first 3 non-region games of the season so far. What's your take on Ogden?
You know, they're like we were talking earlier, they're kind of a conundrum. They're kind of like, you know, the first week they come out and they put up huge numbers. The second week they come out and put up, you know, decent numbers. And the third week they come out and get beat by a Logan team who, you know, struggled all of last year, but, you know, still a good football club. And so they're a lot like us. They're still trying to figure themselves out.
Let's talk about the individuals. Quarterback Beau DeVries so far for this team has definitely put up some decent numbers. He's completed close to 40 passes this season. He's around that 900-yard mark. I really am interested in the touchdown-to-interception ratio, 11 touchdowns to only two picks. But, Coach, he does signal out. He singles out a couple of wide receivers on this team. He's got his comfortable options.
He definitely does have his comfortable options, but he's a kid who can move the pocket. You know, he can throw inside the pocket. He can throw on the run. I mean, there was a play where he was moving to his left as the right-handed quarterback, flipped the hips around and threw a strike about 25 yards down the field. So this kid's a player, and if we can get pressure on him, we're gonna be okay.
Let's talk about the running backs. They have two kids that definitely carry the bulk of the load, Coach. We'll start with Irvin Gaslam. This is a kid that will also, or excuse me, not Gaslam, Ryle Hansen. Gaslam is a kid that we're going to see on the outside as a wide receiver. But Hansen, and then they also have Chase Butler, two kids that have accumulated close to 600 yards. Butler's got a huge yards per carry average, but on the flip side, it looks like Hansen's going to get the bulk of the carries.
Yeah, Hanson's going to be their inside guy. You know, he's going to run between the tackles, and Butler's going to be the kid that they're going to give those fly sweeps, jet sweeps, and anything on the outside, too. I mean, he's quick. He's shifty. You know, Hanson's a kid who's got one or two moves and get downhill pretty quickly. And so both of these guys are going to be tough. They're going to be tough to stop. But I think, you know, with our guys on the inside, I think we can limit Hanson's touches in the middle, and I think, you know, if we can get our linebackers to come up and play, we can corral Chase Butler for, you know, for minimal damage on the outside.
What can we expect from Ogden defensively?
You know, they've run out of a 3-4 look from what I've seen. They'll occasionally walk a linebacker up and show kind of a forefront, but they'll gap the center and give that forefront look. You know, quite often they'll leave the number two receiver, you know, uncovered, or he'll be covered by a deep free safety. And so there's a quick game that you can play there, you know, with the number two receiver. But, you know, we'll just have to see what they do defensively with us. You know, they could expect us to come out in double wing, and they could change it entirely. They could expect us to come out in the veer and stay in that three front. And there's some other things that we can do offensively to keep them off balance.
Let's talk about the injury front, Coach. How healthy is your team right now?
You know, we're actually pretty healthy. We had Lou dislocated a finger, but, you know, that's common in football. And so, you know, he'll just tape that up and he'll go with it. And for the most part, everyone else is pretty healthy. We do have, you know, Lee Moon's kind of battling strep throat right now. So hopefully he'll be prepared, ready to go on Friday. But, you know, he's been in, he's gotten the shots, he's taken care of himself. And so hopefully he'll be back and be healthy.
It's kind of odd, right, to be this healthy this late in the season. I think for some of the smaller schools where you almost have to play Ironman football on both sides of the ball, it just seems like injuries are almost inevitable at this time of the season, Coach.
Yeah, we've done actually a pretty good job with our kids in the weight room and with conditioning and those things. So our kids have done what they've needed to do to remain healthy.
Well, Coach, I always look forward to the conversations. I always look forward to Carbon High School football. I definitely appreciate the time today, and we will catch you on the game on Friday.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate you having me on. Remember, go Dinos.
Go Dinos, definitely. Thank you again, Coach.
All right, appreciate it.
Again, Coach Josh Huntsman of the Carbon Dino football program talking about tomorrow night's game. Live coverage will begin at 6:30 p.m. on KRPX 95.3 The Peak. Kickoff is going to follow at 7 o'clock. We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up from the Auto Farm Studios when we return.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Forum Studios, KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Do not forget, tonight we have NFL football coming up as the world champion Philadelphia Eagles take on the Atlanta Falcons. We'll send you out to live coverage at 6. Kickoff is set for 6:20. Joining us right now to talk some football, we have Antoine Staley on the phone right now. He always talks college football with us. Antoine also covers the Miami Dolphins for USA Today Wire, plus college football for Athlon Sports. Antoine, it's always a pleasure to get you on the show. I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Yeah, anytime.
I know this is a busy week for you because, well, we have NFL football coming up this weekend, and I know you're always knee-deep into college football as well.
Yeah, definitely. Well, the Hurricanes come back after their crushing loss last week to LSU, So they're opening up their home schedule against Savannah State, a team that obviously they should beat. And then the Dolphins will end up opening their season against the Titans on Sunday. So, yeah, definitely busy times with football being back.
You give me the perfect segue. I want to start with the Miami Hurricanes here for a moment. It was a dreadful performance Sunday night. I mean, dreadful. This is a team that was, at one point in time, remember, they were in the driver's seat to get to the college football playoff after picking up an historically big win over Notre Dame on national TV. And since that win, this team has not looked the same.
No, it just has not. Even in the victory against Virginia last year, I believe, before Pitt. And they're just not looking – they're not the same football team. A lot of people want to put that on Malik Rozier, but I don't think that's necessarily fair to put everything on him. I think a lot of their problems are his fault. But the offensive line, I think the Hurricanes' offensive line hasn't been necessarily performing up to task as well. The defense has had some good opportunities and spots. But you look at the difference is between the Hurricanes' last – four losses in this one. I mean, early in the season, they were creating turnovers. They only had one turnover in their four losses. And you look at Sunday night, they didn't have any turnovers. The turnout chain didn't come out at all. So I think that's really been the big difference between the Hurricanes early on in the season and now.
Let me ask you this. How much of it can you blame on Mark Richt? I'm not seeing a lot of... I don't want to say accountability being thrown his way, but it just doesn't seem like his name is being mentioned for a team that has lost really four consecutive games that were marquee matchups that had a lot of meaning.
Yeah, it's partly his fault. I blame him for the simple fact that not necessarily Rozier's situation, but the fact that he didn't have anybody prepared behind him. He knew what the quarterback situation was. A lot of people talked about Nakosi Perry or Kate Weldon ended up being the backup. Perry was even suspended for the game, dating back to something that happened in the spring. But it just seems like they were just going to stick to Rozier for whatever reason. And I don't understand. And he said Rozier was the best option. So I feel like a lot of that falls on him. It's about coaching. And also you look at how undisciplined they were in that football game. They had a lot of dumb penalties. And I feel like a lot of those ended up costing them against LSU.
You mentioned Miami has a perfect opportunity for a bounce-back game this weekend as they take on Savannah State. Another school that suffered a bad loss on Saturday was Michigan with John Harbaugh. Obviously, this one has built a lot of attention throughout the week with Braylon Edwards calling out the Michigan players and the coaching staff and Harbaugh telling them, come after me. As far as Michigan goes, they get Western Michigan this weekend. Now the schedule lightens up for the Wolverines over the next few weeks. Who suffered the more intense loss moving forward? Was it Miami or was it Michigan this past Saturday?
That's a tough question, actually. I think a lot of people thought Michigan was going to be better than what they were. I did not. I thought Notre Dame was the better team, and I know we talked about that last week. I think I played probably from just an embarrassing standpoint. I think Miami's loss was much more severe because nobody knew exactly what LSU was, and they had a lot of moving parts coming into the season. With Michigan, yeah, I mean, Notre Dame, I feel like they're equal as far as rankings, and even though I thought the Irish were a better team, I think it's a bad look on Harbaugh's part on a number of different levels because you finally got your quarterback in Shea Patterson. A lot of people talked about how, well, they just needed a quarterback, but you finally got your guy now, and then you're still having issues scoring points. I mean, so, again, that falls on him. That's coaching. And I don't know what he's going to be able to do. It's not going to get any easier with the schedule. Yeah, they play Western Michigan this week, but you got Wisconsin on the schedule. You got Penn State on the schedule. You also have Ohio State and Michigan State on the schedule. So we could be talking about a 8-4, 7-5 season for Michigan. And we, as you know, that's never on the standard there.
No, definitely not. Again, we're being joined right now by Antoine Staley of Athlon Sports as we talk college football. Let's move ahead and take a look at some of the other games on Saturday. I don't know if it's can't-miss football, but a game that I'm definitely interested in, it's UCLA at Oklahoma. And right now, Oklahoma's like a 31-point favorite in this game. They look good in the post-Baker Mayfield era. They really held Singletary intact, the marquee running back for Florida Atlantic. But it's UCLA and Oklahoma, so maybe based off name recognition alone and the fact that we're seeing Chip Kelly back on the sideline, maybe that's why I'm interested in this game. It probably is not going to be very competitive for very long, but still, I'll probably tune into this game, Antoine.
Yeah, I mean, I think from an Oklahoma standpoint, hey, they look they're like a well-oiled machine against FAU last week, and no Baker Mayfield. It wasn't any problems there scoring points as they just ran the outs right out of the building. And yeah, you got Chip Kelly coming back well, UCLA, but they lost their opener to start the year. So I have a hard time believing they're going to be able to stay with a team like Oklahoma, who not only might be the best team in the Big 12, they could definitely be one of the best teams in college football.
Oh, I agree with that. When you take a look at the offensive weapons that they have, I don't think it really matters who's under center at quarterback. Are we talking about Murray? Are we talking about Anderson? It doesn't matter. Life after Baker Mayfield is just fine in Oklahoma, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, Lincoln Riley has done just a tremendous job. I know a lot of people thought it'd be a great question how soon as we do with Bob Stoops no longer there and retired. But I think their offense has even got even better with Lincoln Riley there, and that's hard to do, especially with how Oklahoma was scoring points. And they might even be better this year, not only with the quarterback situation with Murray, but they have a lot of dynamic running backs and also wide receivers as well.
Let's talk Georgia, South Carolina. This is number 3 going up against number 24. Obviously, an upset here would really shake things up as far as the SEC race goes. It could really screw up the quota. And I'm not saying South Carolina is going to win this game, but I think we have a tight contest here. I don't know that Georgia could cover that 9.5-point spread. That's how close I think this game is going to be.
That's what I was about to say. I would not. If you're a betting person, I would not take Georgia with the points, except because it's early on in the season, and the game is also at Columbia, and it's a rivalry game. So you factor all of those things in. And I think South Carolina is a better team than what people think. I don't think a lot of people know about the Gamecocks. Yeah, they've taken their lumps against Clemson, but look how good Clemson has been the last few years. But, yeah, I think with everything they have coming back, Will Muschamp has done a really solid job with that Gamecocks program. They have a really good quarterback in Jake Bentley, who I think is among one of the best in the SEC. I think the Gamecocks could definitely make this interesting. I like Georgia to win the game, but it would not surprise me if South Carolina would or keep it close or possibly win a close game.
Now, if you like offensive football, the two names you got to be aware of for South Carolina, as you mentioned, Jake Bentley, one of the best quarterbacks in the SEC, was brilliant this past Saturday. I know they went up against Coastal Carolina, but still, he was so efficient. And they also have a legitimate back. They have a couple of legitimate backs coming out of the backfield. If it's Rico Dowdy or Tyson Williams, I mean, they have the offensive weapons to keep a game exciting.
Yeah, it's just a matter of can they do it against a stout Georgia defense. I will say this, Georgia defense has some players to replace. I know they ended up having an easy game last week, but we'll see how well they're able to replace them. Of course, the most notable name from that group is Roquan Swift, who's now playing with the Bears. But, yeah, I'm curious to see how that defense stacks up against a much better opponent than the Gamecocks, which you usually don't think of Will Muschamp having a really good offense, but I definitely think he does there in Columbia this year.
I love the fact that we have two SEC, I'll go ahead and call them heavyweights, especially out of the East, going toe-to-toe with each other right out of the gate. I also love the fact that we get two Pac-12 teams that are really, I don't want to say the Pac-12's last chance, or one of the two chances for the Pac-12 to grab a playoff spot. I know Washington took a loss, but Washington's going to be just fine. USC and Stanford, this is kind of a separation game. And Antoine, I expect the North to be overwhelmingly better than the South, but this is an opportunity for a team from the South to make some noise. USC on the road against Stanford with a freshman quarterback.
Yeah, I definitely, this is, like you said, it's a statement game for USC. I think they're a team that nobody's really talking about going into the year for various variety of reasons. I think a lot of people thought Washington, they still might be, the Huskies might be the best team in there, and Stanford. I always think Stanford just kind of gets all lost in the shuffle when you're talking about best teams in the country, but they're always consistent. They may lose a game or two throughout the season, but they end up, you look at the end of the year, they end up having 10 wins. But, yeah, this is going to be a good quality game. I expect it to be very close. I probably will take Stanford leaning towards just because of what you said. You got USC starting a very young quarterback against a pretty veteran Stanford team. But this game is kind of a coin flip to me.
USC last week, and this is something I want to point out to all the USC haters, and I definitely fall in line with that. So I'm looking at a realistic standpoint here. This USC team may take a loss or two at the beginning of the season, but when we get to the end of the season and the last two games for USC are against UCLA and Notre Dame, we will have a completely different looking team at that stage in the season than what we have right now. That's why I like Stanford in this game. JT Daniels was fine last week. I think USC has one of the most prolific running backs in the Pac-12, and he's young and wear coming out of the gate. I like what they have, but they're just so young. It's going to take about 4 or 5 weeks. I think this is perfect timing for Stanford.
I agree. You definitely want to get this team. They're talented. The talented group, not only offensively, I feel like they have some talent on the defensive end as well. But, yeah, as you alluded on it, I just think they're a very young team. And, yeah, if you're going to get them, it's best to get them early because, yeah, I think they will get better as the year goes along. And playing teams like you say, UCLA and, of course, Notre Dame out there in the Coliseum later on, I definitely think when you look at their standards later on in the year, they could be probably a non-win team. But, yeah, I definitely think they're going to lose some games early on just because they're youth and inexperienced.
Stanford, Bryce Love, 18 carries for 29 yards in the opener last week against San Diego State. That means he's primed for a big game. Over, under 110 yards for Bryce Love in this game against USC.
I'm going to go it over just because I think they really rely on him. And I think he's one of the best players in the country. And he's definitely a true Heisman candidate. So, yeah, I definitely think if he goes over, which I expect him to, I think Stanford's definitely going to win the game.
Definitely looking at the rankings, you know, there are a couple of colleges from the other five conferences. Central Florida picks up a win. Boise State's in the top 20 right now. Out of those squads not from a Power 5 conference, who's the team to watch right now?
I like Boise. I know a lot of people still like Central Florida right now, but we have to see how they play. And, of course, they have some transition. Josh Heupel is the new head coach there. They do have a dynamic quarterback there coming back, but they also lost some key contributors there. Of course, Griffin there on the defensive end. So, yeah, I definitely still think they're going to be a good team, but I like Boise. I think Boise could be in that win the Big Time Bowl game when it's all said and done, one of those prom six games that you want to be in. So it wouldn't surprise me if Boise State were to either finish 11-1 or possibly 12-0.
And we'll end with this, Antoine. I know that you have a vote for the Heisman. People talk about this as the most coveted individual award, in my opinion, in sports. Jonathan Taylor goes for 145 yards for Wisconsin in the opener. Right now, in your mind, is he kind of the clear front runner?
Yes, I think so. Because you know what you're going to get out of Wisconsin. They're going to run the football. They're going to play defense and just kind of try to have quality play from the quarterback position. But they like to feed their running backs. This is going back nearly 30 years since Barry Alvarez was there. It's the same type of offense pretty much and the same type of scheme. It's just they've just kind of changed some things up. But, yeah, they love to feed their running backs, and I wouldn't be surprised if Taylor were to host the Heisman. For me, it would be Taylor or Love.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, really, they got to be 1-2 at this point in time. Love can't really afford another game with 29 yards rushing, but I don't think we're going to see that again. I think I'm with you. I think he has a big game against USC this Saturday. Antoine, it's always fun to get you on to talk college football. Before I let you go, let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
You find me at Athlon Sports. Also find me at Twitter, Antoine Staley, and my work at USA Today covering Dolphins.
Antoine, it's always fun to get you on. Love the insight. Thank you very much. We've got a break for just a moment. When we return, we'll talk NFL football to close out this Thursday edition of the show right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
In 5, 4, 3, 2.
I'm Joe Wade Formicola, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Zero name, no gimmicks.
On 7:50 AM, KOAL.
So I came to the grave, real name, no gimmicks.
Back to close out this Thursday edition of Drive Time Sports. Again, coming up in about an hour, we'll send you out to live coverage as the Eagles and the Falcons open up the 2018 season. We probably should have spent more time talking NFL today, Travis. A lot of the dumb storylines. And what I mean by dumb, Le'Veon Bell. I mean, that's contract, that's business. I understand it's going to affect the level of play. But I'm ready to start talking about wins and losses in teams on the field. Okay, so tonight, Eagles-Falcons, Super Bowl champs. I don't know if Philadelphia has what it takes to repeat. Very difficult to repeat in the NFL. Look at the incredible run that the Patriots have been on. How many times have the Patriots been able to repeat?
Once, right?
Yeah.
The Eagles and Panthers back-to-back? Is that the
yep.
year?
It's been that long. It's hard to do.
They go like, what, every other year maybe, they have a little drought. But yeah, winning back-to-back is very difficult in the NFL.
It is because it's one game and you are done in the postseason. And I think there has been times where the best team has not necessarily won the Super Bowl. But you know what? That's what makes it fun. According to ESPN, they give the Eagles an 11% chance of winning the Super Bowl. Is that high or low in your estimation?
It's probably about right. The NFC is just so loaded. I don't think the Eagles can repeat. I don't.
What's the most interesting storyline in tonight's game? I'll tell you, for me, it's Matt Ryan and the Atlanta Falcons with a new-look offense. You know, a little bit of a jumbled mess last year. I think Julio Jones is going to have a better season. I think the Falcons are going to try to implement him more in the red zone. And I think going out and drafting Calvin Ridley is proof that they're legitimately concerned in trying to make sure they get the most out of this window that they have that is rapidly closing. And that's what's happening right now. Julio got his new contract. I love Ridley. I like Sanu. I like Devontae Freeman. I like Tevin Coleman. I like Austin Hooper. I think they have one of the best arsenals in the NFL when it comes to the offensive side of the football. To me, that's the story tonight.
Falcons realistically should be looking at going for their second Super Bowl in 3 years.
They should.
They blew a golden opportunity. I just don't know how many more chances you can get after this year if you don't get it done this year. So for me, I'm very high on Atlanta in the NFC. I think Atlanta wins the game tonight. I like Matt Ryan. I like the offense. But, you know, it's just things that you can't recover from. And it seemed like last year they came stagnant out of the gate, couldn't recover from that Super Bowl, got in the playoffs, beat the Rams on the road, and the following week couldn't get it done. So I don't know how far Atlanta can go, but I like them tonight.
I like Atlanta tonight as well. And that's not a knock on the Eagles, but the fact is last season they had depth defensively, and they don't necessarily have that depth this year. Timmy Jernigan's already out for the first 6 weeks. You go out, you get Michael Bennett, you get Haloti Ngata. So they do have some depth, definitely not what they had last season. Defensively, I think the Eagles are good. I don't think they're great. I think the Falcons can expose them tonight through the secondary with the options they have in the middle and on the outside. I like Atlanta to get a win tonight, but I'm also very high on the Falcons this season.
So am I. I think Atlanta is a team that's going to be fighting for an NFC championship berth with the Rams.
I agree. To me, the two teams in the NFC, it's the Rams and the Falcons.
And that's who I picked. I picked Rams versus Falcons for my NFC Championship prediction.
Now, I will tell you the one team, and look, it could be the Eagles, but I'm going over the course of four different divisions here, okay? My final four in the NFC would look like this, in no particular order. The four teams competing to get to the NFC title game. And I know I'm going out on a limb when I say this. The Eagles, the Falcons, the Vikings, and the Rams. To me, those are the four best teams. The team in the NFC that I think you have to pay attention to, it's Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. And the reason I say the Packers is because of Aaron Rodgers. I think the Packers are going to be a little bit better this season. If you have a healthy Aaron Rodgers, you never count that team out. They can sneak into the playoffs at 10-6 and go on a tear because they have one of the greatest to ever play the game. But to me in the NFC, those four teams are the teams that I would look at, and we get to see two of them going up against each other tonight in the season opener. And I also want to use tonight's game as a reference point 10 weeks from now. Because the Eagles are going to look drastically different once Timmy Jernigan comes back. They're going to look drastically different once Carson Wentz comes back because he's not playing tonight. Use tonight's game as a reference point to see who improves throughout the season.
Yeah, I'm different with you on the Final Four. If my Final Four, I'd go Philadelphia, Atlanta. Instead of the Vikings, I have the Saints.
That's fair.
And Rams. Yeah, so those four.
I like what the Vikings have defensively. And I think because of that, the Vikings are more of a threat to the Rams or the Falcons. Because typically, look, give me a good defense over a good offense any day of the week.
And that team should have been in the Super Bowl last year, Minnesota.
They should have been, with Case Keenum at quarterback. And I think they improved with Kirk Cousins as quarterback this year. But that's fair. I can buy that. I can buy the Saints. We're not talking a lot of AFC football because tonight it is all NFC. Now, tomorrow we will go over the list of NFL games that are lined up for us. As far as the Sunday games go, we might as well talk about it since we have a couple of extra minutes. What Sunday game are you most looking forward to?
Houston and New England, because I think those two teams are going to be battling all year for division. The division is going to go to the Patriots. I think the Texans will win the division. I think the Texans can make some noise in the playoffs.
Texans have a division that is theirs for the taking.
Yeah.
Jacksonville's in that division as well. You got to watch them, but yes.
Yeah, I think those two teams, if we're talking Final Four, I think I wouldn't be shocked if the Texans and the Patriots, you know, were playing in the divisional round.
I have two games on Sunday, and I want to talk about these tomorrow on the show. San Francisco at Minnesota. Love that game. I want to see if San Francisco is worthy of the offseason hype. Already down Jerick McKinnon. Alfred Morris is going to have a golden opportunity in San Francisco. Jimmy Garoppolo, now teams have had a full offseason to prepare for him. And again, I love the Vikings defense. I like that game a lot. San Francisco at Minnesota. The afternoon game, Seattle at Denver. And the reason is, maybe people are too disrespectful towards Seattle. Russell Wilson is a magician. I know that they've lost us. The Legion of Boom is gone. I get that. But people are talking about Seattle as if they are done, finished, no chance in the NFC West. And I'm one of those people. But because they have Russell Wilson, because they still have Pete Carroll, because they still have some of those remaining options, I'm curious on Seattle. And Denver, I still don't think they have a quarterback. Opportunity for Case Keenum in front of the hometown crowd to get something done. You know as well as I know that the Bronco faithful are very unforgiving. I like this game, Denver and Seattle. Those are the two games I'm going to be watching hands down on Sunday.
Yeah, Denver still has a very good defense. I don't think they have a quarterback. I agree with you. In Seattle, they still have Russell Wilson. So it's two teams kind of in a different transition type mode. Seattle's kind of in a rebuild, and Denver kind of rebuilt the defense. Now they're going to see if they can, you know, fly by with the quarterback that they have. Kind of like when Peyton Manning was there and they won a Super Bowl.
Out of time on the show today. Again, coming up, NFL football action at 6 p.m. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Have a terrific Thursday. We are out.